Imagine you're out at like an incredibly high-end restaurant.
Okay, that's nice.
Right. You're having a phenomenal evening. The ambiance is just perfect. You order your meal, you eat, you pay the check, but then, right as you're grabbing your coat to leave, you turn back to the waiter and ask for a quick glass of water.
Pretty standard.
Yeah, exactly. The waiter smiles, nods, and says, "Absolutely, I can get you that water, but first, I am going to have to charge you for that entire steak dinner all over again."
Oh, wow. Yeah, I would be furious.
You'd be furious. I mean, it makes absolute no sense in the physical world, but in the digital world specifically, in the world of artificial intelligence, that is the exact problem AI builders are currently dealing with.
It really is.
Every single time you ask a follow-up question, the system is fundamentally built to like force you to pay for the whole meal again.
Which is exactly what makes today's source material so revealing. We're unpacking a deeply insightful technical teardown. It's titled Prompt Cache is Architecture, Not an Optimization.
It's such a great title.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
And by looking at a snapshot of the underlying code in a modern agent runtime, we get to see this fascinating, almost secretive way that engineers are solving this exact restaurant problem.
Yes, and welcome to this deep dive, everyone. If you're joining us today, you're a fellow curious learner, and our mission for this deep dive is to fundamentally change how you understand AI agents.
Right, because we aren't just looking at how an AI, like, thinks.
Exactly. Or what models score the highest on some standardized test. We are looking at the invisible, highly rigid blueprint that dictates what an AI is economically allowed to do.
Because the intelligence of the model is really only half the story.
Yeah.
The server budget is the other half. And I mean, it might be the half that actually matters more right now.
Definitely. So to set the baseline here, we need to clearly define what we mean by caching, because the conventional definition is, well, it's actually leading people astray.
Oh, 100%. If you have any background in web development, you probably view caching like a content delivery network.
Right, like storing images.
Yeah, you store some heavy images or a homepage on a server geographically closer to the user so it loads a few milliseconds faster.
It's a nice little bonus for speed and cost.
Exactly. You sprinkle it on at the end of the project. But our source makes a definitive claim here. In serious agent runtimes, the systems that manage multiple AI workers, like Claude code caching, isn't a nice bonus. It is the very architecture of the system itself.
Everything else is built around it.
Everything.
Okay, let's unpack this because this is where that common misconception completely falls apart. The author of our source was digging through a snapshot of the Claude Code runtime, and they noticed something completely bizarre in the forking logic.
Oh, the placeholder trick.
Yes. Let me set the scene for you. The system wants to spawn a new worker. Say it needs a subagent to go off and read a specific file while the main agent keeps talking to you. You would think it just hands that new worker a fresh, customized set of instructions for reading that file, right?
You'd think so, yeah, but it does not.
It doesn't.
No, when the runtime forks a worker from a message that contains tool use blocks, and just to clarify, a tool use block is essentially a structured request where the AI says, "Hey, pause the text generation. I need to use the web browser or read a file now."
Right, it's calling a tool.
Exactly. So when it forks from that, the system does something incredibly counterintuitive. It keeps the full parent message, and then it constructs identical tool result placeholders for every single tool block.
Wait, identical?
Yes, using the exact same empty text for every single child worker. It builds this massive uniform block of text and only appends the specific customized child instruction at the very absolute end.
Okay, so to make this visual, imagine you're a university professor and you need to give slightly different final exam instructions to three different students.
Okay, I'm
But
bold.
instead of just handing them each a customized one-page memo, you go to the copier and photocopy a massive 500-page textbook up to page 499 for all three students. And then only on page 500, you change the final sentence for each of them just to avoid having to rewrite the whole book.
It sounds insane.
It sounds incredibly inefficient.
It does sound inefficient, until you understand how the machine actually reads that textbook. The system demands that these prefixes, those first 499 pages, be byte identical.
Not just
Not
close.
just semantically similar. every single zero and one has to match perfectly.
Let me pause you there because I think this is the core of the mystery. These AI models are like the most advanced natural language processors in human history.
Oh, absolutely.
They can write a sonnet in the style of Shakespeare. They can summarize dense legal documents. So why can't Anthropic or OpenAI just build a smart semantic cache? If I paraphrase a sentence or swap a comma for a semicolon, shouldn't the incredibly smart AI recognize, oh, they mean the same thing, I'll just use the cached memory?
That is a brilliant question.
Right.
And the answer really comes down to separating the brain from the filing cabinet.
Okay, the brain and the filing cabinet.
Right. The AI model itself, the neural network, doing the actual thinking, is indeed incredibly smart. It can understand paraphrasing. But running that neural network is massively expensive and slow.
Right.
The cache, on the other hand, is the filing cabinet. It operates before the AI even gets to do any thinking. So to make the filing cabinet blindingly fast and cheap, engineers use cryptographic hashing.
Cryptographic hashing.
Yeah. They take your entire text and run it through a mathematical formula that spits out a fixed-length string of characters. If you change a single comma or add a single space, the math changes completely.
And it spits out a totally different string.
Exactly. The filing cabinet looks at that new string, says, I don't have a match for this, and forces the expensive AI brain to read the entire 500-page book from scratch.
So the filing cabinet is inherently dumb by design, so it can be fast.
Proceed.
If a single byte is out of place, you pay the full price.
Which brings us to the economics of why that matters so much.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about an expensive prefix, what are we actually sending to the AI? Because I think as a user, you assume you're just sending your one little prompt, you type, summarize this project, and you think that's the whole transaction.
Yeah, that illusion of simplicity is basically the hallmark of a good user interface.
Right.
But underneath that text box, in a serious agent system, your little prompt is just the tiny tip of a massive iceberg. The expensive prefix includes a huge system prompt that dictates the AI's core personality and constraints.
And tools, right.
Yes, complex tool schemas. And these aren't just names of tools. They are dense, highly structured JSON manuals that teach the AI the exact parameters required to operate a web browser or read a local file or execute Python code safely.
Wow.
And then on top of all that, you add your entire conversation history and all the previous outputs the AI has generated. We are talking about tens of thousands of words being sent every single time you hit enter. And if you want to fan out, three workers say you want one agent to search the web, one to read your local code base, and one to draft an email summary. If each of those workers rebuilds that massive iceberg of text slightly differently, you pay for reading all those schemas and histories three separate times.
Exactly.
I actually have a painful personal reference point for this.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I once left a poorly written script running on a cloud server overnight. It was making these tiny, unoptimized API calls in a loop. I woke up to a cloud computing bill that genuinely made my stomach drop.
Oh, I've been there. It's the worst feeling.
It really is. And that was just me messing around. If a company is scaling this to millions of users, paying for the whole meal three times for every single subtask is going to bankrupt them by Tuesday.
Yeah, and that is the exact accounting nightmare this architecture prevents.
Yeah.
By using that weird trick with the empty placeholders, keeping that massive prefix byte identical, and only varying the final instruction at the very end fan out, suddenly goes from financially ruinous to incredibly cheap.
You just pay for the massive prefix exactly once.
Right. The three child workers ride for free on that cached memory.
Yeah.
They just pull the file out of the cabinet. And this fundamentally alters what the product is allowed to do.
How so?
Well, when fan out is cheap, the AI can afford to spawn background agents. It can constantly summarize what's happening without you asking. It can continuously extract long-term memories. It can branch out into long-lived, complex workflows.
Okay, I see where this is going, but I have a conceptual roadblock I need to throw at you.
Let's hear it.
People talk about multi-agent systems out in the wild all the time, and it's almost always framed as a human management problem.
Like an org chart.
Exactly. You see those startup pitches with diagrams of an AI CEO agent delegating tasks to an AI developer agent who talks to an AI QA agent. It's pitched as an orchestration challenge, but break the work apart logically and assign it to the right department. Does this cache reality mean those fancy whiteboard diagrams are basically fiction?
What's fascinating here is that the source makes a profound point that addresses that exact roadblock. Worker topology is completely downstream from cache strategy.
Downstream from the cache.
Yes. Topology being the management structure you just described, who reports to who, and how tasks are divided. If you design your agent hierarchy based purely on human logic or what looks good on a whiteboard, but you ignore the bi-identical hashing rules, your beautiful hierarchy will be way too expensive to run.
It'll just bleed money.
Exactly. You have to design your hierarchy based strictly on what the cache will allow.
So orchestration and cache design aren't two separate disciplines. They are the exact same system.
They are.
The moment you decide to add sub-agents to your product, your caching policy is already dictating your product's behavior.
Yes. The underlying cost structure enforces the system design. And the author of our source didn't just notice this placeholder trick in one isolated pocket of the code base.
Right, they found other clues.
They found structural clues hidden throughout the entire architecture that prove this obsession with cache identity infects absolutely everything. There are three specific pieces of evidence they highlight. The first is something called cache safe params.
Oh, right. In the code they found, cache safe params is an actual formal type definition.
It is.
It explicitly models the portions of the request that must remain identical, like the system prompt, the user context, the tool context. The runtime isn't just loosely hoping developers reuse some context. It is formally, strictly defining at the architectural level what parts of the request are sacred.
Exactly. If it's in cache safe params, you do not touch it. Which leads directly to the second piece of evidence, and this is arguably the most surprising one, the compaction path.
Compaction path.
Yeah, so as an AI conversation gets longer and longer, eventually you run out of memory. So the system has to compact or summarize the older history to save space.
Makes sense.
But the source points out a specific warning in the code telling developers not to set a maximum limit on output tokens during this compaction process.
Which feels completely backward. I mean, if you're trying to save space and compact things, setting a maximum token limit seems like the most logical thing to do. Why would adjusting a simple token limit break the cache?
Because doing so alters what the code base calls the thinking configuration. This comes back to how the filing cabinet works. The system isn't just hashing the text. It's hashing the metadata of the request, too.
Oh, the metadata.
Yeah. If you change a setting like max output tokens, even if the text of the 500-page book is flawlessly identical, the metadata of the request has changed. The system sees a different configuration, assumes it's an entirely new context, and the cache misses.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Let me try a metaphor for this. It's like having a highly exclusive VIP pass to a club.
Okay.
You go in, the bouncer scans your pass, you're good. You step outside for a minute, you put on a different jacket, and you try to get back in. You have the exact same VIP pass, you're the exact same person, but the bouncer looks at the metadata, your jacket says wrong configuration, and sends you to the back of a 3-hour line.
That is exactly it.
The text was identical, but the wrapper around it changed.
That perfectly captures the strictness of the mechanism. The bouncer isn't using common sense. The bouncer is executing a rigid rule. And this strictness explains the third piece of evidence, subagent context cloning.
Right.
When a subagent is created, its context in the computer's memory is deliberately cloned in a highly specific way. The system bends over backward to ensure the wire format never diverges.
Wait, before we go further, when you say wire format, you're talking about the literal raw data packet, like the JSON payload that gets sent over the internet from the user's machine to the AI's servers, right?
Exactly that. The physical structure of the data traveling on the wire. The runtime creates perfect memory clones of these objects before they are serialized into JSON, specifically to guarantee that when the placeholders are filled in, the bytes line up flawlessly.
It's just wild.
It is. This isn't some late-stage optimization that a random engineer threw in to shave off 2 milliseconds of latency. This is a foundational load-bearing pillar of the architecture.
Which reveals the inevitable trade-off at the heart of all this. You gain massive economic leverage by building around the cache. You get the cheap fan-out, the background agents, the long workflows. But you introduce what the source vividly describes as a fragile glass engine.
It is incredibly fragile. The dark side of this rigid architecture is that seemingly harmless, routine software updates can quietly destroy your entire system's economics.
Give me an example.
Well, let's say a developer is cleaning up the code and decides to change the alphabetical order in which the AI's tools are listed in the system prompt, or they tweak how a bulleted list is rendered in a background summary.
Just moving the search web tool description above the read file tool description. I mean, to a human developer reviewing that code, that is less than nothing. It's just tidying up.
To a human, it's tidying. To the cryptographic hash function, it is a catastrophic miss.
A miss.
Yeah. A different tool order means the bytes are different, the prefix string changes, the VIP pass is revoked, and the cache is broken. In this world, semantically equivalent is not equivalent enough. The source notes that because of this extreme sensitivity, an agent runtime becomes as complex and delicate to maintain as a large-scale distributed system. A tiny, invisible change in one file can cause a massive spike in your cloud computing bill tomorrow.
So, looking at this, my immediate question is, why do this? Why willingly step into a situation where your code base is essentially a glass cannon?
Mm-hmm.
Why build a system so delicate that a formatting tweak like adding a single space to a JSON file could blow up your server budget? Is there no other way?
If we connect this to the broader trajectory of the industry, there really isn't another way to achieve scale.
Really?
The leverage you gain, the ability to run complex, multi-step, multi-agent workflows without bleeding money, is the only path forward for advanced AI. If you don't play this dangerous game with the cash, your AI product will forever be restricted to short, isolated, one-off tasks.
Like, write me an email.
Right, or summarize this page. But if you want an AI that can sit in the background of your operating system, read your incoming messages, draft contextual responses, run code to verify data, and compile reports over a session that lasts for hours or days,
mm-hmm.
you have to embrace the glass engine. The fragility is simply the price of admission.
It's the literal cost of moving from a parlor trick toy to a professional tool.
Exactly.
And if we zoom out to the future of agents and what this means for the engineers building them and the rest of us using them, this dynamic isn't going away. Hardware isn't going to suddenly make this irrelevant, is it? Because the context we want the AI to hold is growing faster than the chips can process it.
That is the crucial bottleneck.
Mm-hmm.
We went from models that can remember a few pages of text to models that can ingest entire libraries in just a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
The demand for context is skyrocketing. As agent products succeed, they're going to maintain much longer histories. They will attach dozens or hundreds of complex tools, and they will integrate deeply with real messy environments like enterprise databases. The expensive prefix is going to get significantly heavier.
The textbook you have to photocopy perfectly is going from 500 pages to 5,000 pages, maybe 50,000 pages.
Exactly. And because of that escalating weight, agent systems are evolving entirely. They're looking less and less like the simple prompt engineering products we've gotten used to over the last few years.
Right.
Instead, they are becoming cache-preserving execution engines with a language model tucked inside.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, the model's raw intelligence is just the engine block. The real engineering feat is the transmission system wrapped around it, carefully managing the boat-identical cache.
So, if you are a developer, a product manager, or just someone trying to understand where the tech ecosystem is heading, our source outlines some really clear, actionable takeaways. First, you have to treat your expensive prefixes as reusable assets. They aren't just blocks of text you send off. They are structural, load-bearing beams in your application.
Second, you need to deliberately design your worker fanout so that only the suffix, that tiny, customized piece at the very end of the prompt, varies. You have to meticulously isolate your variables to protect the prefix.
And crucially, you have to make sure your cost structure is highly visible to your engineering team, embedded right into your runtime design. Cost can't just be a spreadsheet sitting on a dashboard for the finance team to cry over at the end of the month.
Definitely not.
It has to be treated as a strict engineering constraint right alongside latency and memory limits, which really suggests a massive shift in the industry. The era of casual prompt engineering, just writing clever instructions in plain English, seems to be taking a back seat.
It is being fundamentally subordinated to hardcore systems engineering. You can have the most beautifully crafted, clever prompt in the world, one that yields amazing results on a single test run. But if that prompt breaks the cache every time it executes in a loop, no serious company is going to deploy it at scale.
Yeah.
It's a profound reality check for the industry. You have to deeply understand these rigid back-end mechanics if you want to build anything that survives contact with the real world.
To recap the journey we've taken today, we started with this weird, incredibly specific trick involving empty tool placeholders. We explored the mechanics of cryptographic hashing that demand absolute byte perfection. And from there, we unspooled a reality where the cache isn't just about saving a few cents.
Right.
It is the strict, unforgiving budget that dictates how much thinking, branching, and background work an AI is capable of executing. We learned that every time you interact with an advanced agent, there is a massive, invisible textbook of context being carefully managed, byte by byte, to ensure you don't have to pay for the whole meal twice.
It really reframes the entire AI interface. You aren't just talking to a brain. You are tiptoeing around a highly sensitive filing cabinet.
Yeah.
And that brings up a lingering thought that builds directly on the implications of this source, something for us to really mull over. If the future of AI depends entirely on maintaining rigid, byte-identical histories to stay economically viable, what happens when we start integrating these agents deeper into human environments?
Ooh.
Human communication is inherently messy. It's filled with typos, emotional shifts, sudden topic changes, and recursive thoughts. We are the absolute opposite of byte-identical.
We are the ultimate cash-breakers.
We really are. So the provocative question is this: as these systems become more deeply integrated into our daily lives, like our phones, our cars, our workplaces, will the AI eventually learn to handle our messy, cash-breaking nature economically? Or will we eventually have to change the way we speak and interact, standardizing our own inputs just to fit into the AI's fragile cash budget?
Will we have to become byte-identical just to afford to talk to our own digital assistants? That is a wild, slightly unnerving thought to leave on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the invisible architecture shaping our future. Keep exploring, keep questioning the hidden structures around you, and remember, sometimes the most important part of the system is the part trying desperately not to change. See you next time.